All right, David, thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. So let's talk about the brand. Let's talk about the inspiration behind the brand and just get started on your journey.
Sure. So where is there anywhere I should start or just give a short introduction?
Of course, just a back at the beginning, maybe of how you conceptualized everything and when that began for you.
Cool. So with Toscobot, it's at the forefront is a storytelling brand. I don't really consider it a perfume brand. That's because of my background, because I used to be a filmmaker before I got into perfume. So I always had stories that I felt were important to share with people, and I actually explored multiple mediums before settling on perfumery. So I love to paint, I love to write as well. And Toscobot was born in the pandemic because it gave me the opportunity to explore this new medium, find at the same time a new hobby, a new occupation, but also explore an industry that was booming at the time when other industries were struggling, manufacturing and selling perfume and luxury goods in general were a few of the industries that were doing well in the pandemic. So that made me realize, maybe it's a lot more realistic to try to fit my stories into an industry like this one rather than have the ambition to only do it via film, because film was really struggling. And yeah, it seemed like a dream in the beginning. It was just like idealistic. It was small steps. I thought I would only sort of conceptualize it and find the right people to help me bring it to life. But a few years later, I actually managed to do most of it by myself. So that's how it birthed. And we're a year and a half old now, and it's going a lot better than I could have ever expected, and I'm very thankful for that.
Absolutely. Well, I came across the brand on Dazed Beauty, and of course, I was really excited, to see a lot of your conceptual fragrances. How do your personal experiences influence your fragrance creations in general?
So all of my perfumes and all of my stories, I would say, originate in a personal experience. I think most creatives do the same. Doesn't really matter what you create, it's always gonna, come out of a meaningful place. You're not just gonna do it just to create something new. That's what corporations do rather. So yeah, they're all personal, but at the same time, for many years now, I realized, sharing your stories when it's just personal, that's a beautiful thing, but you cannot really expect the world to embrace it with open arms if all you aim to do is to tell your personal story. So rather to in order to be empathetic with other people, but also to receive the empathy of the others, you should try to bridge the gap between what's personal and what's universal. So I try to think of these memories that are really important to me, or these emotions, and not sort of think it's intrinsically my own. It's not, solely my own, and try to relate that memory that I lived to the larger human experience. And I think that's what Toscobot really does, is bring something that many people can resonate with. It's not something that's David's memories. It's not something that's memories from Romania, where I'm from. It's rather human memories. So no matter who you are, where you're from, or if you're even interested in perfume, chances are you'll find something that will speak to you.
I've never heard it described that way. I find that really fascinating that you articulated your process as being a balance of the individual and the collective. Because so many people focus on how personal things are to them. We're
Yeah.
very guilty of that, but you're articulating how from a business standpoint, it's also imperative to balance the individual and the collective. I found that really fascinating when you said that.
Thank you. Yeah, honestly, it's at times it doesn't feel as pure because it's not just you on your own. I still do things just for myself. You know, I still have perfumes or stories that are just my own and they'll never see the light of day. But I think you have to have this balance and not expect more than the world is ready to give. You know, if people appreciate you, then that's really fortunate. But at times you can also give them some pointers or give them a helping hand. If you just expect to be your own self unapologetically, and then people to gravitate to you, then you should be ready to face the frustration that it could take a long, long time or even forever, you know. I think that if you want to increase your chances and you want more people to be exposed to what you have to say, it's helpful to also think about whoever's on the receiving side of the message, you know, not just... Because at Toscovara, I mean, I'm already quite unfiltered and quite, you know, I don't ask for permission or I don't really think of what's going to sell and what's not going to perform well. I just think in the sort of, not in the business term, but I think empathy is the best word, you know. I don't necessarily care if this perfume is going to sell better, but I care, is this perfume going to speak to multiple people? Or just a very, very niche group.
Yeah, that's very sensible. And speaking to your fragrances, I mean, this is where it gets especially interesting because your fragrances often reflect complex concepts. For example, a Christmas-themed critique of capitalism and Anarchist A. And of course, I want to get to Inexcusable Evil later. But can you elaborate on your process for developing such narrative-driven scents? Because they're incredibly complex storytelling profiles.
Yeah, I want to keep it sort of very, you know, hit a wide range of emotions while at the same time not giving you too much. So if I make a Christmas perfume, I want it to be able to be interpreted so many number of ways. So first of all, not just for this age or not just for one religion or not just for one country. So I try to find these commonalities. And with Anarchist, I thought, you know, Christmas mostly could be two things in our memory. It could be a spiritual event, time to be with family, to reflect on the year that passed, and to basically enjoy the best things that we have. Or rather, the way I see it going now towards more of just consuming and going with what we're told by, you know, no matter what you're exposed to in terms of marketing or in terms of media, it affects your world. So I think that's why it really speaks to a lot of people because it's universal. If the origin of Christmas wasn't universal in all cultures, the downfall of Christmas clearly is a lot more widespread. We live it the same way no matter where we're from. But at the same time, right, I couldn't just make a pessimistic, unwearable sort of a deceptive perfume. I wanted to keep true to both, you know, the spiritual incense-y notes with the resins, and just mention, you know, the evil, this slight not evil, I don't know what I should call it, you know, the contrast between something as artificial as plastic and something as widely used by humanity for thousands of years like benzoin resin.
Of course. Well, I too like the juxtaposition, and you know, it goes without saying, I mean, Toscovat, when you're looking at your perfumes, they're highly philosophical. I mean, that certainly resonates with someone like me, it goes without saying. And I think that gets us to the more sensational side of the brand, the concept, of course, being inexcusable evil, which was something, of course, I referenced the Day's Beauty article. You know, what was your process in achieving such an evocative aroma, the inspiration behind this scent, the message, kind of starting at the very beginning, and we can go through it?
Inexcusable Evil was actually the one that I most doubted, the one that I most debated whether it should be released or not, because it had such a big like with the rest of them, the initial seven, I didn't really have any expectations with the way the crowd would receive them. But with this one, I knew I really, really wanted it to either be never released or hated. I wanted it to be so sort of anorganic and scary and brutal that people would find use for it, but use as in introspection or as in a conversation starter rather than something they would actually apply to skin. So just as a starting point, that's already very difficult, you know, to aim to make a perfume that's nobody's ever going to wear. It's like, should I even be successful? I wasn't. It proved to be really popular and people actually wear it quite a bit. And I try not to think about it too much, because if I do, I'm not really sure what I should feel. If I should feel happy, grateful, or feel like I failed. Because it, at its core, why it aimed to be so brutal was to ring an alarm bell to the evil that's going on. You know, obviously I critique consumerism, but at the end of the day, I'm a brand that sells you product, so it's a very thin line not to fall into hypocrisy. And so many brands were making, you know, vocal stances against the wars that were going on and are still are, but they were just commencing when we were launching the brand. And to me, that all seemed just like a facade, because at the end of the day, you know, they share a photo or they change their profile picture, but there's not much people really doing in these big corporations when it boils down to financial interest, you know. If somebody like McDonald's or Coca-Cola could afford to forego a whole market just to make a political stance, no perfume brand did it. So they all still sell everywhere, no matter how, you know, the crimes that a certain state would commit. At the same time, I'm not really sure how it would be my place to critique one state. So that's why it's generally about war, and I'm trying not to mention which one. It's because obviously our name has Russian roots. And going on my mother's side, I'm both Ukrainian and Russian. So that would be the easiest place to start critiquing. And it's obviously the one that initially gave me the inspiration. But at the same time, you look now at more current events with new conflicts. Inexcusable Evil is just as applicable, because just like how capitalism is sort of lived the same in each country, so is war. You know, it's unexplainable, it's not reasonable, it's not, it feels defeating, it feels overpowering, and it makes you feel small. So that's the one sentiment that I hoped Inexcusable Evil could bring, was that wake-up call from your daily life and to make you feel sort of small and not having the comfort to avoid these difficult topics that otherwise we could comfortably avoid.
Of course. And again, deeply personal, deeply philosophical, and it's much appreciated, your explanation. How do you feel about its unexpected popularity? As you mentioned, you know, you were unsure about the reception initially.
I think it's a testament to the culture we live in, where people form opinions really, really fast, and they don't actually engage with the piece of media or the product they're consuming. They're not really adopting it fully. It's more so an impulsive decision. And now, going through it once, I started seeing it everywhere as it happened. So the first time it surprised me, now I realized, like, no, it was totally foreseeable. Because for me, you know, we can say big words like philosophical, like, you know, political, like critique and whatnot. But at the end of the day, for somebody, it could be just as simple to say, oh, I purchased this because I was told I shouldn't. Like that that childish impulse, or I purchased this because it's the only one that's got a different label, so it must be special. Or, you know, even with like the name, it's a challenging name, and I try as much as possible not to go for the easy way to grab attention. I would hope, you know, if I give you to make a comparison to like a YouTube video, I try not to clickbait with the perfume title. I try to serve a purpose. But at the same time, if that tool of giving a different color label in the shocking title helps me get you started in this conversation, then maybe that's what I have to do. I just hoped that even if it got as popular as it did, I hoped people would actually engage with it at a deeper level than just saying, oh, I really like it, even though I shouldn't. It's really pleasant on my skin. That's appreciated, but I hoped they would talk about that. You know, whenever I hear somebody talking about it, they're either like, oh, it's so pungent, it's so difficult to wear, or it's, no, I love it, I have 100 perfumes in my collection, and this one's the most special. Which, you know, one is positive and one is negative, but for me, both are sort of wasted, because my aim was to actually get you started on talking about another topic. So it's proof that no matter what we aim to say, it's only in our control before we launch it. After it's out in the world, it's up to each consumer and each community to understand it the way they see fit.
Okay. Yeah, that's very sensible as well. And, you know, speaking to that point a little bit more, you know, you mentioned the sensational aspect of these perfumes. And certainly, I know in the past, I've not been one to shy away from sensationalism. I think it's, you know, just a great marketing tool in general. Speaking to the reaction to sensational scents, how have people responded to all of your more unconventional scents? I know they provoke very strong emotions and you wish for them to promote further discussion, but let's talk about some of your favorite sensational scents that you've created.
Well, I would say it's hard to pinpoint a few of them. Because even if we're talking about the safer ones or the more conventional notes, you'll see across my range, all perfumes are either highly appreciated or hated. So that shows me that they're unique. You know, I always hoped not to create something that would be passable. To me, that's the highest failure, to just make something passable, something okay, something people will tolerate and then forget. I really do appreciate the negative feedback more so than the lukewarm feedback. So there must be something in my body of work that maybe I don't even know what it is that brings out this reaction, even with the sense that I consider a lot more tame. And if I would guess what it is, it's that I must leave like a fingerprint, a patina on what I touch, because I'm so out of the conventional industry. You know, I'm not classically trained. I don't care much about the cost of producing a single bottle or a single new scent, because at the scale that we deal with such a limited number of products, it doesn't matter that much. So for me, if a perfume is triple the price to produce than the previous one, that's not going to stop me to launch it, because it doesn't make a big difference when you're an indie company. Whereas I can completely understand why, if you're in every department store, that just cannot be a risk you're willing to take. So what I noticed is that people really feel strongly even to scents that I consider like safe office wears, which is like clean florals. There must be something that's so strange to them, so foreign, after wearing the classic stuff that we're sold for, say, 30 years. And now this seems so foreign, it's automatically either love or hate. So that's great for me.
So let's speak more to the process, because you mentioned the development process, the chemistry, and art of fragrance making. Can you discuss your approach to developing unconventional notes, such as blood, but perhaps in general, just your process?
You know what, what's fascinating for people that sort of never smelled any of the aroma chemicals we use, most, even perfume consumers that have huge collections, they are kept so in the dark and they're so unaware that there could be an equal amount of work going into creating a pineapple accord, which seems a lot more mundane than a blood accord. At the end of the day, for us, they're both fantasy notes. They're both materials that do not secrete any essential oil that we could use and directly put. So if you have a perfume with an orange note, it could be natural orange. It could be orange oil. But if you've got pineapple as a note in a fragrance, that's just as synthetic and tough to compose as a blood note. So that's a starting point. And I feel it's important to tell people when they say, oh, this note is bullshit or this note is just shock value. Well, you've been so accustomed to not knowing the line between what's real and what's marketing that you don't even know that maybe for the past decades you've been using fantasy notes. Now, with notes like these, like pineapple, even though it's a fantasy note, we've got a lot of academia that tells us how to do it right. You know, it's been a note that people have been trying to capture in perfume for decades. So you have a starting point. It's not like you're trying to capture the smell of an alien. You have a starting point. So even though it's synthetic and it's created in a lab, you still have this school that backs it up to how to make it realistic. Whereas with something like blood, the sources that you can reach out to are a lot more limited. But at the same time, what I do is I don't limit myself to books on perfumery or even though most scents have a classic, say, French formula to the making of the perfume. It's a starting point that allows me to play and change and alter the percentages. So it's a discovery. So you study what chemicals are sort of in the headspace, what evaporates when you heat something, what chemical is common in this ingredient and that ingredient. So to give an example, Inexcusable Evil, that has like gunpowder and concrete, those are woody materials or dry ambery materials, as people in the industry call them, that could be used in a classical array of sort of ambery perfumes or modern blue fragrances. So it's all intertwined. It's more so a game of doing the slightest alteration together with the art of storytelling that would make you sense that you're smelling blood just as realistically as you'd think you smell pineapple, when both of them at the end of the day are just sensations that I'm inducing. It's not a reality. And that's because nature is intertwined. So I gave the example, I think in the interview previously, I gave the example of linalool, which is a volatile that we captured and we used it as an aroma chemical in our work, and it could be presented so many different ways. So I could put this one chemical and you could think it's either a tropical fruit or a citrus fruit or a flower. So once you get to know these materials, the possibilities are endless, and that's when playtime begins.
I like that. So speaking to the individual, to the end user, a more conventional question, how do you think a fragrance's scent changes based on the person wearing it?
That's fascinating. For the longest, I was sold that it's this thing of like each skin's pH, which suggests the acidity level. But I think that's just like a cop-out because we don't actually know why stuff smells different on each other. You know, you could go with the like like the physical influence you can have on how it smells. So if you hydrate your skin, obviously it's going to smell different, or if you're in a different climate. So me, for example, I tested my own same bottle on my skin in different countries, and they smell different. Now, who am I to say if that's because of the humidity level, the altitude, the other scents that surround it? Because obviously, it's not in isolation. Everything we smell, smell is such a, it's a sense that knows how to stay quiet. You could be smelling 10 different things, but not even realize. And then if you have this like nose mind connection, like this thoughtfulness for 1 second, you realize things go into focus and you're actually sensing an overwhelming amount of smells. I've heard of things even like your sort of your emotion or the moment in your life, how you feel could affect the smell. I don't think that's possible. I think it rather affects the way you interpret or you perceive that smell. Because at the end of the day, smell or perfume is just a stimuli, just like me saying a word to you. Based on where you are in your life right now, you could take that word as a compliment or an insult or be indifferent to it. So that sort of bleeds back to what I was saying, how limited I am. You know, I can give you the smell of blood, but based on where you are at this point in your life, maybe to you it smells like cake and roses. So it's both fun and frustrating, and it's definitely worth looking into more. You know, there's a lot of new studies in science studying how smell affects our behavior, and even the legend of like us being able to synthesize a certain smell to attract partners. That's something people have been fascinated by for thousands of years. So yeah, it's a fascinating topic, which I'm afraid I don't have too many answers to.
Let's speak to that briefly though, because speaking to the abstract and maybe pheromones, things of that nature, because it wouldn't surprise me if you got into something like that in the future, because what you do is very unique. What do you know about that, and what could the possibilities be?
So for the last, say, 150 years, we were told it's bullshit, it's impossible, there's no study to back it up. But at the same time, when you'd get sort of anecdotal evidence, people would swear this makes them feel a certain way or this attracts some people. So it was a big a dichotomy between what the science said and what the people said, which of course made it even more mystical. Recently, I was listening to an interview with Geza Schoen, who's a sort of really, really experienced perfumer. You know, he made Molecule One. So that was sort of his range of play, you know, focusing on one molecule and how it affects people and how they all interpret it different. And he was doing some studies with some German scientists, and he noticed that hedione, which is one of the most prevalent chemicals we use in this industry, actually had a small influence on brain activity at MRI scans. So, you know, that could be a fluke or that could be the start of a breakthrough. But regardless, it shows that something that people use intuitively actually has some sort of real tangible measurement behind it. Even though we didn't know it, we used it instinctively, and we used it because it made the fragrance compound act a certain way. It was perhaps doing even more than we realized. So I would bet a lot of my credibility on hedione and how it's been used so much in the industry. It's tough to go anywhere that sells perfume and not have 80% of what they sell have this one material. So yeah, it's a really interesting topic, and I'd love to see more studies on it.
As would I. I would be curious to see if what we could do with DNA technology these days could be tailored combining
That's
genetics
getting scary,
with the
though. That's
field.
getting scary. That's like Minority Report vibes. It's, you could get a sample of somebody's DNA and with future technology, maybe know what smell would bring them through their childhood, and that would be sort of evil, wouldn't it? Like, exploit your emotion that way. I don't know. It's a thin line. That's
It
why I
is.
think
It seems like the inevitability.
it should be in the hands of the consumer. I think this search is the one of the few beautiful things in this industry. I'm quite against of always buying a new bottle or always buying a new product. But at the same time, if that brings you joy and purpose in your life, and you're searching for something in this world that could fill a gap, that's also beautiful at the same time. I'd love it a lot more if it was you traveling or meeting people, but if it's searching for that one perfume, then that could be beautiful too.
Respect. So, what are your views in that case on mainstream perfumery and just your thoughts on the commercial fragrance industry as a whole and the way you approach versus?
I usually, when I don't have nice things to say, I don't say much. The overall sentiment is that I'm disappointed, but it's not a classical feeling of disappointment, because I'm disappointed it goes this way, but at the same time I fully understand why it could not work many other ways. That's why I see a big gap with what we're doing with like people like me and other really small creators and the rest of the segment, where industrial brands with thousands of products and hundreds of workers, they're still called niche. And I really don't know how that could be niche, because they have the same end goal and the same quotas they have to reach as somebody as big as Chanel or Dior. But I don't condemn them. Like, honestly, the perfumers working there, they're experts. They went through a lot more years of training than I will have the time to go through. And the decision makers, even though I don't agree with what they decide to sell and how they sell it, there's so many other ways they could do it. Our resources are finite. One of the chemicals that we use that many people really condemn is ambroxan, because it's so prevalent. But it's a bit naive to demonize a smell just because it's synthetic. That one was born because of our scarcity of natural ambergris, contrasted with our abundance of clary sage that had no use other than a few companies selling tea. So if science allowed us to find something where it shouldn't have existed, but at the same time it's not doing anything negative for anybody, and it's really cheap at the same time, and it performs well, who am I to say it's a negative thing? Just recently, 2, 3 years into making perfumes, I've had the opportunity to create a scent with natural ambergris. And that's like one of the most expensive ingredients. It's more expensive than gold. It's really hard to find. It's an honor to use it, but I'm not gonna lie, I was underwhelmed. It's really special by itself, because it's a perfume in itself. You don't have to mix it. But if you do add it to an existing fragrance, it's not more special than what synthetics offer us. So that's why I'm going back to your question, how I feel with the industry. Many people would say, oh, the industry's went bad because they don't use natural ambergris anymore because it's expensive. Well, yes, but why are they bad? They give you an alternative, and they give a lot more people the alternative. Maybe you would be willing to pay $1,000 for a perfume, but when you think that you want to sell it to a lot more people, maybe we should give the chance to, not be so exclusive, not be so limiting. I feel like perfume, for the longest, it's not been really democratized. It's always been like a luxury good. When you went to purchase it, at least where I'm from, you had this feeling of people judging you, and you having to, yeah, it's you know, I could go on for a long while. It's not good, but it's up to us to see the light in it. If you want to look for things to complain about, you're always going to find them, no matter the industry. You know, if you look at how our phones are made, how our clothes are made, those are a lot more evil.
No, I understand the sentiment. It's true. And, you know, art is what is supposedly bridges of those divides. I, like you, probably try to focus on the artistic aspect first and, you know, compensate wherever we can as it pertains to sustainability. I would like, before speaking to the future, because I really enjoyed your take on the business aspect of this, before we speak to the future, let's talk about Romania. Can you expand on how you capture the essence of a place like the Moldova region in Romania for a fragrance, and just your thoughts are?
I think the easiest way to justify something like that would be to say, oh, this plant or this fruit, it only grows here, or it only grows in this time of the month, or even if you smelled it or tasted where you're from, it was probably imported from us. But that only gives half the answer, because you could be in a place that has no singular form of flora. It could have something really common, but with you, it could build such an important memory and emotion, and you would associate it as being pertaining to your country, even though it's not necessarily just yours. So, you know, if you look at what people in Romania used historically, it should smell like sheep's cheese and ale. But who am I to tell somebody that's growing grain now that, you can't remember home when you feel the smell of corn or wheat? If that's what Romania is to them, it's because our life has the beauty of us exchanging resources and you know, have building relationships with each other, no matter how spread out and far away we are from each other. So I would never dare to say I captured a certain place fully. Rather, I capture my interpretation of my visit there. And I hope that multiple people had the same experience and I can bring it back to them. But I would never dictate that this is the only way or this is what's representative of this place. To give a good analogy, there's this brand that I really like called Zoologist. And the creator, he decides, well, their scents inspired by animals and their habitats. And he has things like squid, like tiger, even T-Rex. And that's because most of us don't interact with these animals. So we're not really able to say, no, that's not what a tiger smells like. There's very few people that were so close to a tiger that they can say that. And that's what he very well predicted, was that I shouldn't release a perfume called cat or dog, because that's when people are going to bring their pitchforks. Everybody's going to say, no, that's not what a dog smells like. That's not what, going back, that's not what Moldova smells like. That's not what Romania smells like. It's because when you speak in absolutes, people are always ready to have an opposing view. Rather, when you give them pointers, it's a lot more beautiful. It starts a conversation and people think, well, did I experience this? Did I not experience this? Would I like to see it in this light? So that's the way I'm trying to do things.
Okay. So I suppose, as it pertains to your taste right now, do you have a personal favorite fragrance or one that holds special significance?
Yeah, I'd have... I'm a person that rarely likes to do the same thing 2 days in a row. So it doesn't really matter if it's the food I'm having, the perfume I'm wearing, the clothes I'm wearing. I always want to have something new or see it in a new light. So it's really hard for me to say this perfume is more special than the past one. I know it's just special today, and tomorrow another one will get its turn. However, saying that, I still have two in my own range that I kept going back to more often, which were Age of Innocence, because that one was both a pleasure to design and work on. And even though it was one of the ones in the more difficult half to bring to reality and for me to be satisfied that I managed to capture what I was trying to capture, I think that made it sort of a bit more valuable in my memory. The fact that it was a struggle gave it an added dimension. And also the fact that it's so full of contrast that it basically works in any occasion. And the second one I wear quite a bit is one that we're going to release in a week. We're actually going to release it on Christmas Day. And it's called Last Birthday Cake. And it's been the scent that took me the longest to figure out how to feel like I managed to portray it sincerely, because it's about our whole life cycle. It's from being a baby to being a decaying corpse. So it tells the story of all the birthday cakes you've experienced in a lifetime. So when you're a baby, you don't have teeth and you just enjoy the milk. And then as you grow older, you're introduced to this sugary notes, this gourmand notes. And then it transforms into a boozy perfume. And then finally it goes to resin and smoke and dryness. So maybe if I had to just pick one that I could wear for a whole year, I think those would be the two contenders.
Wow. I'm glad you told me about your newest fragrance. That's super exciting and interesting. And how has Toscabot evolved since its inception in 2022, and where do you see it heading in the future?
So multiple changes were clear to see. First of all, I touched on this before, but we didn't think too much about the reception. But now it's still not like it guides our decisions or like it's a deal breaker, but it's impossible to say it's not in the back of your mind, you know? Before you ever release anything, it's easy to say, oh, none of you are going to influence me. But now that you saw people's reaction, I'm sure it does influence me, even if I wouldn't be aware. So that speaks to the creative part. Now to the rest of it. It changes because it constantly evolves. Being as lucky as we were to be successful and to manage to keep it on its feet in the first year, which usually is really tough for a business. With us, we were so lucky it helped us even invest more, and we're upgrading everything we can. So our packaging is going to be prettier next year. The materials we use are going to be able to be rarer or more expensive. That's not saying they're better, but we're just able to offer even a new dimension. Also, we're growing in the sense that we're able to give people the chance to test at a place near them. We have 23 retailers at the moment, and we love the fact that people trust us to carry our brand on their shelves, because at the end of the day, perfume is something people need to interact with. It's not a t-shirt that you just buy online and take the risk, whether you need it a medium or a large. It's beautiful when you find store owners that know that this medium has a particularity and how it treats its customers and how it needs to be welcoming and how they train their staff to talk about it. So it's evolving and growing in so many directions. And I can only hope it'll get even bigger in the sense that it'll birth other brands that do the same thing, because I always wear my references on my sleeve. I'm fully inspired by the people that came before me, and I can only hope I inspire other people to tell their own stories.
Absolutely. Well, that brings us to our final question. Are there any upcoming projects or new fragrance lines that you're particularly excited about?
Yes. So it was supposed to be a surprise, but now that I already mentioned it, we're going to release five new fragrances on Christmas Day. A few people got the chance to have a preview of them at Scent Explorer in New York. and the reception was fantastic. And we're really happy we can still surprise people that, you know, we were happy we weren't a one hit wonder. And I'm also working now on other brands as well. So it's not just Toscobot anymore. I had the pleasure of working with other Romanian brands at the beginning. Then with sort of bespoke projects also for people here. But now even internationally, I get to design a few perfumes for other people and other brands. And that's a whole new experience, because it's not just... It goes along the lines of going back to the film industry. I hated being edited. I hated the sort of aspect where it's not just one creator. And now me finding it here in the perfume industry, I see that it's not as bad as I expected. It's not, you know, when you do find somebody that just wants to edit you, it's not pleasant. But when you find somebody that's willing to actually add to your creativity, it's really pleasant. So as long as you pick the projects and the people right and informed, and it's a true pleasure to, you know, to do a collaboration. So that's what people can expect from us. So it's going to be a beautiful year.
Yes, it is. And I appreciate this conversation so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I mean, the brand is amazing and looking forward to many incredible things in the future.
Thank you for your time and thank you for giving us the platform. And it was a pleasure as well to see people willing to listen to my thoughts.
Of course, David. I appreciate it so much, brother. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. See you soon.
See you soon.